This week we talk to the boss, Tim Donnelly, and we deal the hand of fate with our sweet ninja skills and book it out of here. This and more on episode 138 of Indie Game Riot. Everybody, I am Josh, and of course, I am once again joined by Eric M. Hunter. You can't see my finger behind what has now been dubbed the Death Star of my microphone. And also, Tim Donnelly, who's been on the show several times before, but special today, we're interviewing him after his release of Boss 101, finally!
Finally.
It's been a while.
Oh, man, I bet that's
3.5 years later, finally.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that long.
So we'll be interviewing him a little bit later. But first, how's everyone's week been in Eric's case or Tim? Tim, you go first. How's it been since the last time you were on?
Well, to say the last week, I mean, we could talk about Boss 101 stuff. I'm sure that'll be the main topic, but it's been nice. I mean, ever since the game is released, it's strange. Like, once we hit publish and Steam, it was just like this kind of a weight lifted at least a little bit. We're still working on the game, though. There's still actually stuff to be done. There's little fixes, quality of life, some feedback from users, timing, just things are happening this week, but it's been nice. I think can't talk about too much, but let's just say that we're working on some stuff that we hope, Boss 101 related, that we hope to announce soon. Most of it just relates to sort of other publishing opportunities. Can't get too much into details, at least at this moment.
As in you guys publishing? Or?
Yeah, it's basically related to Boss 101. It's not too difficult to possibly guess. I can't confirm or deny anything. But I'll definitely pass the news to you first as soon as I hear anything concrete. But
sweet.
Like I said, mostly it's been great. It's been nice. I mean, the feedback on the game is good. People that are buying it are liking it, and most of the reviews are really, really positive. So at least the people that get it really get it for the right reasons, which is really nice. Getting, sometimes when people are saying, maybe they don't like Boss 101, they're not sort of, it's not gelling for them.
After I left my review, I actually read some of the negative ones.
Yeah.
And they're all the same. Right. And then it's like, well, I mean, then it's obviously not for you. It's all the same people that are not, you know what I mean?
It's a very, very stratified people that don't like it. It seems to be, and again, this is my opinion, it seems to be, it's pretty much people that were looking for maybe a little more hardcore shooter, a little more hardcore shooter. They're sort of going like, this isn't. The problem that I always have with that, at least personally, I kind of find strange, is people that are saying, I've been following this game for years, and this isn't what I expected. And I'm like, well, if you've been following us for years, that means you've been looking at our dev blogs for years, and we've never promised ever a hardcore shooter, and we've never, in fact, we've gone so far as to say it isn't that. We're really just a action-adventure game, got shooter elements, we've got, shooter bits, and it has the heart, in a sense, of the structure of the shooter, but, we never said it was this hardcore, next-gen pattern-making super boss thing, but the reviewers are like, you guys... There's sort of those people like, I feel like this isn't really what I was expecting. And I'm like, okay, if you've been watching the game, you know what to expect.
Tim,
you're supposed to be the
Dark Souls of shmups now.
Yeah. Well, you can now. We added. It's funny because we added difficulty settings now. So it's basically for people that are saying like if they want something extremely challenging, this is make it super difficult. We added that stuff so you can crank it up to 11 if you want.
It was hard enough. You saw me play. I'm terrible.
And now it can be for everybody. You really could dial it up to what you want or down to what you want. Like the lighter settings, you're just going to have kind of a fun adventure. If you get up a little higher, you're going to have to really pick and choose weapons and hats and abilities a lot more carefully. But most of that stuff, though, it's pretty minor. I think the overwhelming sense that I'm getting is that people, like I said, are liking it. we're hoping to expand the audience, you know, some now, because the main thing, again, we'll talk more about this, is just we're spending our time right now sort of spreading the word, trying to get as many people to look at it and review it as possible. That's probably the main thing that's been going on for the last, you know, at least since release, so probably the last couple of weeks.
Right. Well, I'll talk to you more about it in your interview, because I found some interesting stuff in there. But Eric, how's your week been?
It's been fine.
Good. Good. I'm glad. I didn't care about your week anyway.
No, it's been boring. I've done nothing but work. So I work retail, so we're rearing up for the holidays. So.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Oh, boy, for tomorrow.
I'm off tomorrow, so.
Well, that's good, because most retail isn't, which is bullshit.
You're bullshit.
I wish everyone could get together and just tell the stores to fuck off. Like, no one go into work on Thursday. No one shop, no one work, and just tell them to fuck off, because it's such nonsense. Take people away from their families. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. my week...
You? Anything?
Yeah, my week is... we actually had our like, my as in my family, my kids and wife, and myself... had our Thanksgiving dinner right before the show, so I'm stuffed and sleepy.
so what do you got for me? What are you gonna bring over?
We got the Turk. We got the. Let me ask you guys. I'm gonna judge the hell out of your character based on your answer here. Do you eat the cranberry relish or the cranberry out of the can?
Oh, I'm a jelly guy.
Is it that just that big cranberry thing that comes out that's the shape of a can?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's See, that's what I grew up with, but I like both. I mean, I can eat it out of a can. Well, you're talking just like pour the thing out and eat it. Yeah, I'll eat that. I don't care.
Okay. Well, at least you're... Come on, man. At least you've
been sucking
that.
On socks and rocks for 2 years. I'll eat anything at this point.
That relish is fucking disgusting. I don't know why people make that. I don't know why people eat it.
It's just that homemade thing.
Not only is it gross, but then the texture, it's like chewing on like little tiny pebbles, and it just breaks your teeth with seeds in it.
Wait, do cranberries have little seeds in them?
I don't know. The relish that my family makes has seeds in it.
Okay.
It hurts. It gets stuck in your teeth. If it doesn't break your teeth, it's stuck in between them, and then that hurts.
It's no good. Ugh. It's no good. You're eating it wrong, is what people are telling me. Tobor, eating it wrong.
Tobor in the chat says he has like no idea.
It's the dark souls of
rocks in their guts.
it's called Pennsylvania Dutch.
God.
They make some weird stuff. Although, admittedly, there are some of the stuff that I like. And not as weird as some of the stuff that my family, my wife's family makes. Look up Peanut Bit. It's basically...
P-I-T?
I think it's P-I-N... I'm not sure how to spell it, to be completely honest. But anyway, it's basically rotted fish. It's disgusting.
Good. That sounds... Yes.
You want us to look that
it's a,
up
it's
for
a
real?
It's a Filipino dish.
It's so weird. When I searched for it, it just came up gay porn. Why is that, Josh?
Don't search your name.
Oh, that's...
it's not even a joke.
But it is true.
Yeah. Anyway... So happy Thanksgiving, everyone. And one other thing I want to mention too, for everyone who, I mean, everyone probably already knows about it, but I would want to voice my, support, I guess, for dealing with the net neutrality issue. And net neutrality, if that stuff is repealed, if it's no longer a utility and they repeal all the protections that are there, I mean, there's potential indie game riot ceases to exist, depending on how the companies handle that. And they don't have a good track record, I will say that. So please consider finding ways to contact your Congress people and telling them to fucking do their job and, you know, listen to the majority of America, which is their job. There's tons of ways to do it, by the way, and you can probably just Google it. I'm not going to bother listing a whole bunch. I just wanted to mention that briefly. So thank you for doing that. I think it's a good time to take an indie news injection.
Are you bored with the same old games?
Yeah.
Why, then give yourself an indie news injection.
Thanks, indie games.
This week on Indie News Injection, first thing we're going to talk about before jumping into the interview with Tim Donnelly is RimWorld has finally entered beta. And they did that with a big update that just came out a couple of days ago, I think. A few days ago. Beta 18 is what they're calling it. They've added a lot of different items like dressers, different size tables and end tables, things like that. They've also changed like the combat stuff. Instead of it's just numbers, like, you know how if you ever played RimWorld, it comes out with like a log when you go into combat, like of what's happening. It's usually just numbers, like this person's damaged for this much. And now it's written out because the whole point of RimWorld, if you haven't played the game, is to basically procedurally generate a cool story. I mean, it's a base builder, but you have to overcome a lot of adversity and things like that. People raid your camp, there's disasters, and based on the stuff that happens, it kind of just creates a cool narrative if you are into like role-playing it a little bit, you know?
Is it basically Dwarf Fortress and space?
So that's what I remember reading, is that this was basically a, how do we turn into Dwarf Fortress into something that's a little bit more accessible to a bigger population?
It is Dwarf Fortress inspired.
Yeah. But I also can't remember the last time a fairly well credible news source printed news about a game going into beta.
First of all, the guy who makes this game, I can't think of his fucking name now, but anyway, is a fairly well known developer. And the fact that RimWorld is an extremely popular indie game and has been in early access for a very long time now. So, I mean, those are things that probably why they picked up on it, to be honest. I personally love
the game. I just thought it was funny. I mean, like, hey, it's reached beta. Like, it hasn't been in beta. It's been in alpha this entire time. Like, are you kidding me?
And speaking of those disasters, by the way, they've added things like tornadoes now. I think they said asteroids or something, which is interesting. I played it today and experienced a tornado. Luckily, it didn't hit my base, but that will fuck. Like the idea for that sort of stuff was they wanted to for people who have highly advanced bases to the point where they feel like they're basically impenetrable and invulnerable. The tornado can come around. Things like that will come around and just totally fuck up your shit. Mm. So,
SimCity.
Yeah. And I forget what the other thing was. Anyway, just wanted to mention that it's coming in beta if you are a fan of RimWorld. If not, I would suggest getting it. There is a good, I don't know if it's on sale, but there is a sale that is going on now on Steam for, it's their fall sale, aka Black Friday sale. So maybe it's on sale.
It is not on sale.
Well, fuck.
$29.99.
Buy it anyway.
$29.99.
It's good. You know what's not $29.99?
Boss 101
is not
also not on sale.
Not on sale. Awesome. What the hell, Tim? I'm just kidding.
It's on sale.
It's only
you guys had your chance. It was on sale for like a week, 10% off. It's like, how much cheaper can it get? I guess free, I suppose. Probably wouldn't be Boss 102 if that was the case.
Be Boss 99.
Yeah. Because it took Boss 99.
I'll think of better ones later.
For everyone who does not know, Boss 101 was made by Tim Donnelly from the Donnelly Time Foundation. Yes.
Three people, 3.5 years is what it was.
Three-person team. It is currently $9.99 on Steam. And by the way, that is a steal. It doesn't need to be on sale. That is an absolute steal. So I would highly suggest going to pick it up for $10.
Yes.
And it is a cool shmup / bullet hell / collectible / unlockable / a lot of cool things. A lot of love and time and detail went into it. And Tim, why don't you go ahead and just talk about it, explain it in your own words?
Well, yeah. God, I gotta say, like, when we did it, when we started working on Boss 101, now that it's released, you know, kind of looking back on, like, a quick post-mortem, you know, the goal is always to make something fun, like a fun game. You know, not to look at definitions of a game, maybe, you know, not to say this is going to be a bullet hell game or this is going to be, you know, a collection game. Everything in there is just about telling a fun story and giving people, the goal, you know, the fun part was getting you, the player, to have stories you can tell your friends, like give you moments in the game that you go, oh, that was kind of fun and cool. I wouldn't mind telling somebody about that the next time I saw him. You know, like somebody goes, oh, what are you playing? Like, oh, I was playing Boss 101. You won't believe it. There's a button in one of the rooms where you press it and turns the game off. Or you can go fly a kite and just listen to these guys talk. Or you can collect pets and you could do sort of random things. But then there's this, you know, kind of a gradual story that unfolds as you play through it. You get visitors from other planets. You meet people from all parts of this galaxy, of the galaxy they live in. You know, you got an upgrade character thing. You've got all these hats and stuff. But all that stuff was just there to serve sort of this sense that you're in this world that's happening at this, you know, like give you all these little areas to play in. I mean, we put in arcade games and stuff. You know, now that it's out, it's funny because the reactions are... It's interesting to see, like I said, that we were talking about earlier, it's interesting to see the people that effectively get it. You know, they kind of get it, and they go into it without any, maybe a solid preconception of what they were expecting. They aren't saying, like, okay, I wanted to see, you know, a very strict bullet hell shooter. I wanted to see, you know, an adventure game in the most traditional sense. If you go into it, like, kind of open-minded, it's... The game will probably catch you the right way. But even if you don't, you can still play it the way you want. I mean, we did allow that. Like, if you do want to just have a bullet hell type experience, not only do we have the difficulty level, but we have the endless boss part of it, which allows you to just basically go straight arcade kind of shooter. It doesn't have any story. It just progresses in difficulty, level after level after level. You can have power-ups, health power-ups, guns drop from the sky, you know, kind of traditional stuff, like power-ups fall from the sky, you can get healed. You can basically, you have two modes. There's that and Ironbot, which is, Ironbot is the same kind of a progression where you can just play sort of a hardcore game and you pick one gun, your favorite gun, and just start mowing through bosses. But yeah, it's been great. I mean, I think for me, it's, as I said, once we get published, one thing we talked about internally was if we do the best game we can, if we do everything that we feel is going to be, you know, important to us and value for the player, when we hit publish, we're not going to have that, because I, you know, I've been in games a long time, and every time a game ships, the first thing that happens, as soon as you see it on the shelf or you see a review or you see anything, you go, oh, I knew level 26 was going to be a problem, or oh, I knew we shouldn't have made that so powerful, oh no, we should have worked on this a little more. But the deal with Boss 101 is we really did our best and put everything into it. I mean, there's things we still are working on, you know, improving if there's a bug or something like that, but we didn't feel it. You know, we felt like this was solid. I mean, it had all the stuff we wanted, at least at the first blush, and it had everything. So it's a really weird feeling because the game came out, we're like, huh, it's good. You know, I mean, that's what we want. And people are like, if they don't, even the people that maybe are kind of going, eh, I don't get it, they all agree, well, this clearly was a lot of love, and there was a lot of hard work put into this game. It's a good version of something, like maybe you don't like a comedy movie, but you can maybe agree that the movie is well done, or maybe you don't like science fiction, but you can agree that the movie itself has a high production value. You're like, that isn't my thing, but it's really well done. And that was our goal, is to get even people that might not be into it to say, well, we can agree they did a good job. We can agree they put in their best. So
I gotta be honest, it's hard to fail at making a good game if you do add, you know, that kind of dedication to it. So,
it's definitely feeling.
So, you mentioned the reviews and people are like, and you were talking about it earlier. I was reading them, and the main thing was like, oh, this is too easy. And like you said, there are a lot of people are looking for hardcore stuff, and I mean, you responded to most of the ones that I looked at.
Yeah.
And how, for like a lot of devs listen to this, so what is your tip to them to kind of dealing with that sort of thing and how to respond, and you know, and how you did it?
Yeah, there's two ways. I mean, I look at it a couple of ways. I look at, you know, well, first of all, I mean, my attitude towards development is you have to do regular updates as you make your game. That doesn't mean you have to do
like a data dump.
Yeah, you don't have to do a data
dump. More of like just a, here's our state of mind, here's where we are.
Yeah, I think the deal is as long as you're cataloging your development, and again, just putting it out there, kind of saying, here's what I'm working on, this is how I'm going. You know, I think it's fair to the consumer to say, especially with games, you know, people are always curious about games, and they, you know, if they want to buy a game, well, the idea behind the development log and the reason it's twofold good is, one is you're getting the word out. It's like free advertising. You know, sometimes it gets picked up by different sites. Sometimes it gets picked up by potential customers. But the other great thing is that it creates this long paper trail, or digital trail, I guess, of what the goals of the game are from an early stage. And it allows moments like, you know, the game comes out and you get a review, maybe that somebody goes, I don't understand. And you're like, well, what don't you understand? Because a lot of people, I mean, now you guys may not believe this, but on the internet, there's a tendency to sometimes jump to a quick conclusion without any facts and state it as if you're the master of all, the authority of all of it. So
I believe everything on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. When that happens, you can kind of gently point out that, well, if you're serious and you're really telling me you don't understand how the game is, you must not have even looked at the store page, because we pretty much clearly outline things. And that's kind of where I feel it's worth engaging with some of those people, because, you know, not everybody, obviously you can't necessarily go after every single person that loves you or hates you. But at the same time, if they're just putting out absolutely what you consider as a developer erroneous information, like a guy's going, well, this is too easy. And we're like, well, okay, you know, to some extent, have you tried the difficulty? Or somebody may say, like one person, not, I don't think on Steam, but one person was like, no, I'm paraphrasing. The quote was something like, oh man, can you, these tutorials, they just explain everything in the game. They just go on and on. And I'm like, you know, the tutorials are optional. That was the very first question when you start the game up. It says, do you want tutorials? And then the next thing the game says, if you say yes to that, is you can cancel it. Any time,
right?
You can cancel any tutorial or all of them if you want. So when somebody is going like, oh god, these tutorials are just killing me, I'm like, you know, that's an optional torture. It's like, you don't, and it's a tutorial. So when you say I want a tutorial, we're kind of assuming you want to know everything and you do want to be walked through things. Like, otherwise it's not a tutorial. It's more
I think the tutorial, by the way, if you're, I mean, even if you don't want the tutorial, I think you're missing out on,
yes,
on getting introduced. Yeah, getting introduced, yes, to everything,
and
on right, to the characters.
Story too. Yeah. I mean, we made it interesting. But again, those are just—it's one of those things that there will always be people that find issues with something. There are always going to be like a problem with your game. There's always going to be, you know, a potentially some problem. They're going to go, well, it's too hard, too easy. You know, this was too quick. This thing is too shiny. This thing is too dull. And I think, again, my the way I look at it is, if somebody who didn't know anything about the game, because people like to go to Steam and look at the negative reviews because they feel those are the honest feelings, or those the people that are positive, forget all those Pollyannas and do-gooders. I want to look at the negative guys, because those guys really break it down.
I think I think negative reviews are important as long as you compare them to the positive reviews.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And even, so what we did is, like I said, I looked at them, and if anybody has any, you know, questions, or if they sort of saying something kind of blankety, like, well, the game is this way or that way, or there's no reason for the hats, or there's something like that, I just go, well, you know, how far are you? I mean, one thing we did too is we just, sometimes, you know, a user will ask us a question in the forums, and it's easy enough just to go to their, surprisingly enough, that's all linked in Steam. You can just go to their Steam profile and see how long they played, and see when they started, and how long they'd been playing. And sometimes we're like, it's interesting, because you look at people, and they played for like, you know, they blasted through all the bosses and most of the game in like 3 or 4 hours, which is almost impossible unless you're skipping everything. Mm-hmm. You know, skipping story, skipping cinema, skipping everything. And they're sort of going, this game is very short. I'm like, yeah, Quentin Tarantino movie would be very short if you cut out all the talking too. Like, it'd be, you know, it's like, what exactly were you coming here for if you're complaining about too short? Like, you're kind of, you're deliberately making it short, and then you're sort of wondering why it's so short. I don't know how we can help you there. Like, if you're saying, you know, you just want an action part, well, we've got options for that. So it's, like I said, mostly it's to address, I think for me, the main thing is, if somebody's looking at a review, you know, and whether it's positive or negative, and it's got potentially misleading information, I'm hoping, you know, my hope is we can correct and address some of that, just so that people don't get the wrong idea. It's a PR thing, you know. I want people to have the right impression when they come into Boss 101, and no bones. It's supposed to be a fun game, you know. It's supposed to have some funny stuff, an entertaining story, but you know, we have a lot of fun weapons in there. And if you play the game the way it's arguably set up, which is bosses are weak to certain weapons and, you know, strong against other ones, you're going to have a fun time, because that's the way it was designed. But if you just go in there and start bashing away, you may hit a wall. We had a guy, a little behind the scenes. The game is designed, obviously, certain bosses are, like I said, weak to, let's say, the machine gun, or they're strong against flamethrowers or whatever, which means they take less damage or more damage, effectively.
Right.
We had a guy that was like, he's playing the game, and he's like, the machine gun is so OP, blah. And he's kind of going on and on. We're like, oh, well, geez, what are you doing? And so what happens is you can basically get bosses that are, you know, weak to certain guns, but the game will, as you go, it will start weeding those parts out of the selection, you know, sort of the random selection. Not that they couldn't be picked, but there's a less chance. So about
really, that explains a lot, because I remember when I was streaming it, I had specific guns, and I was like, okay, all right, I'm going to do this now and find a boss, because you can select, you know, you can keep, you know, rolling bosses. So I was like, all right, I'm going to find a boss I can get. And I was like, why is no one weak to this?
Yes. That explains if you that do it long enough, it'll still, you can still roll it. It just takes a long time. But the idea is you just switch to the next, you know, find another gun that you like, or find a, you pretty much, and, you know, this is just a rough off the top of my head estimate. I'd say you probably are best switching the gun, your secondary gun, that is, maybe 3 or 4 times. That's probably going to give you a pretty good spread. If you switch it more, you're way better off. Like, the more you switch it, the better. I mean, that'll just help you a lot. But point is, this person gets about halfway through the game, and they've effectively, again, roughly speaking, effectively used up all their free passes on the machine gun. And suddenly, the machine gun went from being the most overpowered gun in creation to the least powerful gun of all time. Like, it was suddenly like, all these bosses, oh, you guys, machine gun sucks. And we're like, well, wait a minute, you're just telling us how incredibly powerful it was a second ago. It's like, oh, I didn't get it. And like, have you tried any other guns? No, I'm just playing with the machine gun. It's like, okay, well, all right, well then, you got a job ahead of you. I mean, you can do it. You could still win every level with the machine gun. You just better have a hat that.
Well, I mean, how many games are out there that, you know, you pick up new weapons, and, you know, as you go and progress and stuff like that, you know, specifically so you can beat certain bosses or, you know, levels or whatever in other games. It's the same thing. It's a mechanic.
Like every game, every racing game has that concept in it. Every RPG has that concept in it. Every any game that isn't like a fixed skill game, like Tetris or, you know, maybe even Mario, where it's a pretty basic set of skills that don't really change too much as you go. Almost all of them have that concept. It is strange. It's like, especially because this game's, if you go into the, you start the game up, you can just see all these hats and things, and there must be an immediate sense of like, well, these aren't all here just for nothing. Like, they're, you gotta have to some acceptance of it. Like, if you really think you're gonna play through on with just one or two things, again, it's possible. So I think that to me, though, it you know, that's the small fraction of the people that are playing Boss 101. And then there's this other group that also is probably on the other end of the spectrum that's maybe not super vocal, but they also seem to enjoy it a lot, you know. Mm. You and Matt, who's in the chat, obviously know about the game and played it, but we had handed the game just out of the blue to a bunch of YouTubers, streamers, reviewers. And one of the early ones, and I think you know about this one, Josh, the Catherine of Sky is her YouTube name, and she played the game. She knew nothing about the game, knew nothing about anything, just went into it blind, and she really liked it. She's like, I don't even like these kind of games, you know, I'm more of a builder based type person.
Well, that was
she likes
me. That was
well,
me.
Yeah, you too. Exactly.
I said that in a review. I left. I was like, I'm not really a shmup person. I suck at shmups. I've never really been into shmups, but this game has got me into shmups.
And say because shmup one
this
more
is
time.
Shmup. Mm. Why don't you shut the shmup up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I almost screwed that up.
Exactly, and that she had the same background as you. She's like, you know, she likes the Factorio type games a lot. She really enjoys sort of what's that other
Rimworld.
Vanish? I think that's the other one she likes playing. But the point is, she played it, loved it, and I watched her stream, and her comments were kind of what we'd expect, which is, she's like, oh, there's all these fun little things to do, and there's all these little interesting moments in the game, and there's so much to see, and that was like, it was really nice to hear that. It was just, it's one of those moments where she's pointing out stuff that we put in as little surprises, and she's noticing, you know, like the pets, and when they idle, and when they float around, or the way the hats look. She's like, oh, there's so many cool hats, and I feel like I can look the way I want, and she goes, I love the fact that I can look the way I want, but wear a different hat for my abilities, you know, kind of a skin type thing. And she just, it was like, I hear that and I'm like, okay, that's the reaction. That's the dead bang reaction we hope for. You know, that's somebody going like, I'm loving it. Like, I'm just really enjoying that. And I think there's a lot of people that are seeing that. Like I said, it's funny, a lot of people who I think would have been negative on the game have, even in their comments, been positive on Steam and in reviews in general, where they just go, you know what, I'm a shooter fan, I'm a hardcore shooter person, and this game is not a hardcore shooter game, and I'm a little disappointed in that. However, they say it's just such a fun and entertaining game. Like, I had so much fun playing it. I feel like I got so much out of it. It kind of took me in weird ways. And I think NDO is a guy that I liked his reviews, and I sent him a copy of the game, and I didn't know what he was going to say. He's a guy who's really kind of an in-depth type reviewer on Steam. Mm-hmm. And when he reviewed the game, he played it like all the way through. And I remember he got to the end, and I won't spoil the end of the game. Not the, you know, it's a little game, folks. It's not Usual Suspects at the end, but it's like, there was an ending where it was took a little bit of a turn. And he was like surprised. He's like, oh my God. He goes, I can't believe they went there with this. This is crazy. He goes, what just happened? And then, you know, we do another quick U-turn at that, right after that. And he's like, hold on a second. Is that what I think it is? He goes, oh my God, this game is like totally, it just in like 3 minutes, it just went from one direct 180 and then flipped around again. He goes, this is crazy. And but he had a great reaction. It was great to see somebody play through the very end of the game the first time, you know, like had no idea what was coming, no idea what was happening. And he just got to the end, and it was like there were like three or four things that happened one right after the other, and they all build on everything that's been happening. So it was just awesome. It was fun. But overall, yeah, it's been a great thing. And I think for me right now, the main thing I'd like to see is just the game get picked up by more sites in terms of reviews and stuff, because, you know, that's the only way right now I think we're going to increase our sales, which really is the deal. You know, right. The game being well reviewed within the amount of people we've sold it to, but it's not being picked up in terms of, like, you don't see it on IGN, you don't see it on Destructoid, you don't see it on a lot of YouTubers. That doesn't mean they don't have Steam keys for the game or contact from us. I mean, we've sent stuff to all the sites, you know. So we're hoping for some more, you know, we're kind of pounding on that door as much as we can without seeming like overstaying our welcome. But at the same time, it's like the game's high quality, so we're not too worried.
Two questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, in that gameplay we were watching, it's not on anymore, but and it just reminded me, the numbers that the moles spat out, do they mean something? Is there a code there?
Yes, they do. They don't mean something in as directly as you may think, like in terms of they're actually having this full dialogue language conversation. The things that they're saying is I forgot what kind of encryption it is. There's a very specific type of numeric encryption that I don't know.
So someone can break it. I don't want to spoil it for people that I don't want to spoil it for people that are into like that.
You could break it. What you would be seeing are lines from Herman Melville's Moby Dick. Like, that would be what they're saying to each other. So they're saying like, you know, call me Ishmael, stuff like that. They're just like rambling on about like different lines. I mean, it's just it's kind of out of context. You wouldn't even necessarily, you might recognize it as Moby Dick, but that is what it is. It's like, some of it is there for a while. It was me writing the dialogue and trying to find, you know, just making what you're probably thinking it is, which is a straight deep, you know, language that they're saying very specific things, and they're doing very, you know, it's like you could decode it and come up with this whole other new story. That was a lot of writing, because there's a lot of stuff. The professor, though, his stuff is all inferred. What he's saying, technically, you can infer everything he says from what Steve or Rob translate, because it's like, you know, when somebody, you don't speak a language and the guy next to him is speaking, you know, maybe English. You can kind of guess what the conversation is just by the answers the one guy's giving and questions he's asking. It's not too, too difficult. Mm. And the conversation that we do in the game is deliberately set up so that you can understand what the professor's saying by what people around him are replying and acting around him. So the gophers at the top of the command center, those guys are just like supposedly working on the command center, just randomly saying stuff about anything. Like, they're just blabbing about whatever. But everybody else that speaks in that mechanical language is technically supposed to be inferred by what you're getting around it.
Gotcha.
But it could be decoded, I guess. I mean, I don't.
So the other question was, I mean, like you said, you've been in games for a long time. You worked with AAA games and started your own thing.
Longer than you've been alive.
Yes,
to be honest.
Probably. But even though you've been in there for a long time, since you've done this independently, you know, just you and the other two.
Yes.
Have you learned anything? Has anything surprised you?
Oh yeah. I think that. I've been in games and doing some form of either 3D art or game development for, you know, it's got to be close to 30 years, maybe even a little over it. I mean, it's just been a long time. Now, professionally, I started working at Interplay in the early 90s, but before that, I was doing contract work for, like, 3D art and stuff like that. But point is, yes, Boss 101, honestly, was one of the biggest projects in terms of time that I've been on, because, you know, it took a long time. But normally AAA games that I used to work on, they only are really going to go 2 years, maybe three, at least the ones I've worked on, and this was 3.5. And I think the thing I learned was I come from a very production background where it's like, get this thing done on a certain date, because that's the goal. It was always the game has to be out by 2 years from now, December. That's the goal. Make everything work to the date. Like, in other words, we're going to have 20 levels. Those aren't getting done. Cut it down to 18, cut it down to 15, or do whatever we need to do. Pad this or pad it up or cut it down to make it fit inside this. And it was sort of like packing luggage for a trip where you just sort of go, well, we can't have a jacket in this. We're going to only bring one thing. What are we going to bring? You know, two pair of socks or three? It's like, oh, if you're going to have three pair of socks, you can't have two pair of pants. So you sort of get this thing where you go, you start realizing you're not packing what you want. You're packing to the suitcase you have. So if your suitcase is big, like an EA game where you've got a lot of money and a lot of time, you can pack a big ass suitcase and hit that date because you can just throw anything in it. Mm. If you're a small company with not a lot of money, your suitcase is very limited and you have to kind of be very choosy about what you put in there if you're trying to hit a date in a budget. But when we started on this, we were like, let's just not worry about that. Let's not think like I used to, which was, let's just try and hit this date. Let's just try and get these features in. If the feature doesn't work, fuck it. You know, even if it's fun and it isn't, you know, we don't have time, we just drop it. We just explored everything that was fun. Everything that seemed like a fun thing to do, we did it. Everything that seemed like it was interesting, we did it. If there was, the arcade games were like that. Kite Hill was like that.
So it's liberating compared to...
Oh, God. It was, yes. And it was really, like, a very eye-opening experience because the things that you suddenly think are really important become not very important because every day we would ask, if somebody got a hold of our game and played it, what would their impression honestly be? Would they be excited? Would they go, wow, this is crazy? And we always looked at it from a couple spectrums. I mean, one was, you know, kind of the player we were aiming at. Then we looked at maybe the extreme fan and then the extreme critic. And we always were like, the extreme critic was always, we always wanted the reaction from an extreme critic to be, okay, it's not my thing, but this is a fucking well done game. Like, yes, exactly, and that was the goal. And the only way you can get that is to put in the hard effort of just making something good. You can't half-ass it. Like, we didn't half-ass anything. The joke that we have about everything is, you know, what's the one way to guarantee something gets done is do it the hard way, because the hard way always works. Hard way is the only way to guarantee something will work. Like, it just means if you need to have a animation with 1,000 frames, there aren't any shortcuts, you just do it. If you need to have a giant mountain painted in the background, you just do it. There's no shortcuts, you're not going to find that clip art online, you're not going to be able to cheat it, you just do it.
Raise Bob Ross from the dead, he can draw you mountain.
Yeah. But yeah, it was it. We basically took the hard way on everything. We just said, make it, the only way we're going to get this done is just do it the hard way, which is just put in the animation time. Everything is done in the most basic fashion because we just know that worked, and we didn't really chintz out on stuff. You know, we didn't have, you know, Kite Hill didn't need all those dialogues. We didn't even need to have Kite Hill, honestly. We could have probably done without it.
Next project, though, like, are there things that you will do differently?
No, the same philosophy is still going to apply. We are going to build off the base to build with.
Well, like a lot of people I talk to, like Dean, who made Vidar. That was one of his, not his first game, but that was the first time he really dove into making his own engine.
Right.
Well, he gutted RPG Maker basically, but he did a lot of things that were basically just really inefficient. Like a game that is made in 5 years could have probably been done in like 2.5-3 years by someone who knows more things. Like, is that something that you?
We did. We overdesigned a lot of stuff, and Joshua and I were just talking about that. Joshua is the lead programmer. We were just talking about it the other day, but we didn't. Here's the thing. There are a lot of things that we look at now and go, oh my God, throw us in a time machine. We could remake this game in like a year or less. I mean, but I think the thing is, there isn't anything in the game that's outward facing to the player that we don't think came out right. There's a lot of structural stuff underneath that we could be like, well, this could be more efficient. And, Boss 102 arguably would be that more efficient structure, same, probably a similar outward appearance with features added and stuff like that, but the underlying structure would be good. And that's kind of what I was saying about doing it the hard way, because when you do things the hard way, by that I mean you aren't really cheating the process, you just sort of brute force your way through with the whole thing. And that's just something that when you do that and don't take any shortcuts, you end up with this really solid underpinning that it's hard to look at it and go, well, when you overdesign something and make it really solid, you can just add to it later. It's not really that big a deal. Like our dialogue system, Joshua did this insane stuff. Like he added an ability for like letters to shimmy and wave and all these different colors and blink and do all these. Basically, there's all this crazy stuff we added to it that we just didn't end up using just because of time. And, it didn't really serve a whole lot of purpose for me to go back and make, every dialogue like a wavy gravy and all these weird little like Scooby-Doo things happening. I was just like, it would have been okay. It probably would have been fine, but it wasn't the point of the game at that time. So for us, there are things we definitely want to do, kind of at the end now going, okay, we want to use more of this dialogue system, basically, and use more of what's already there. But there's not a lot of stuff that I would say, like kind of the what went wrong, like, oh, we just got to tear this whole idea was bad, or Kite Hill was a terrible idea, let's just get rid of it. Like, I don't think there's really anything like that. Maybe make the pets more integral the next time around. Mm-hmm. We love the fact that they're even in there. It's kind of fun that you just get a pet, like just flying around. Why not? Who cares? It's just this fun little thing.
More unlockables, I'm okay with it, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. The gophers were the same way. The gophers, I don't know if you know this, but the gopher that you're rescuing, so you go to the level, you can pick up a gopher inside the game, bring it back, and he eventually, if you get to the end, you get a special surprise. But that originally was going to be a clicker game. We had talked about having a clicker game that would give you revenue. You would just start clicking, and you could do auto clicking and all that crap, but it would just fire up and you could just let it run while you play and come back and get little, your gophers, returning gophers would add to that, it would add to the abilities of the clicker game, sort of like clicker heroes. It was cool, but the work that was required to do that was a lot, and it wouldn't have moved the needle, of the impressions of the game. Right. This is kind of the term we use, moving the needle, is like making things better. Like, is it going to make things significantly better? That one wasn't going to move the needle very much relative to what we already did, which is just collecting gophers in the first place. Would have just been a ton. But we did love it, though. We loved the way the game came out.
Do you have any questions? I've been asking mostly questions. I feel like a rude.
Yeah, Eric, any questions?
Interview
I just didn't want to interrupt, was all.
No, please go ahead.
Like everything was fine. No, I think you touched on something. Jesus, it's probably been about 30 minutes ago now. Kidding. That's kind of important about, certain reviews and what people's opinions are. It's like, just because you don't like a certain thing or it didn't end up being something that you wanted, doesn't mean that it's a bad game. Like, I think Josh can contest, like I say that all the time on the show, is like, looks good, it's just not a game for me, and that's okay. Like, I don't think people understand that it's okay
like
to
games.
He's here
for the looks.
I think I bring the face about 3 points up. You've hit on everything, man. I think like the dev blog is very important, whether if you're updating just what your state of mind is of the company and that kind of thing. I think that's good where you're at in the development of the game. I feel like I'm happy for you and your team that you guys have released a game that you're happy with, because I read stuff all the time about like developers just saying to themselves, like, man, if we just had a little bit more time or a little bit more money, we could have did XYZ. And it's like, man, you could have did XYZ a long time ago if you just, you know, would have planned better, or if you would have shortened your scope or something like that. So my favorite question is always, was there any hill that you died on during the production? So, like, was there any, like, feature or aspect or character or gameplay mechanic that you were like, no, fuck you, this is going in the game, I don't care what you say, and then ultimately it had to hit the cutting room floor because of time or anything like that?
Now, this may... There are ideas that we definitely left on the cutting room floor, but they were ones that, again, through the whole development, the question, like I said earlier, was, and there's a specific one thing that I think will answer kind of that question. It's definitely a hill that we came up with late in development, but generally speaking, and again, this is what's weird about Boss 101 versus, you know, 30 years and however many games have shipped or worked on, you know, probably quite a few. This is probably the first time I felt like every hill that we fought on, we won the hill, and which is incredibly weird to say. I've never really been able to say that about a lot. By that, I wouldn't want the implication to be we didn't try to look at some hills and go, well, maybe we should run it. But we did a little test, like we sent a guy up, just a scout, and he got killed immediately. And we're like, let's not do that. Like, that's
just wheel it back in.
But if we decided to take a hill and we decided this is going to be in the game, it was in the game. It was fully, and not only was it in the game, but we said that's what we're doing it the hard way paid off. Is it? We said we're going to put pets in, and we just made it like, because pets, let's say pets started, you know, maybe about halfway through, maybe a little later, and we're like, oh, let's have pets, let's have a pet in the, you know, in the command center. And then we thought, well, they're going to sit on the windowsill, so maybe you just click on the windowsill and it brings up a little menu, you know, just a little like drop down menu type thing that says, do you want a pet, like a dog, a cat, or something? And we thought, oh, that's kind of bullshit, like the game has all this cute art, why wouldn't they be in a nice little home outside or something where they're free and they get to do what they want? Like, okay, let's do that. And so we made that. And then as soon as we made that, we're like, well, wait, when you go to different rooms in the command center, why wouldn't they just follow you everywhere? Because they're just your fun little friend. Like, why wouldn't they do that? And then why wouldn't they follow you around inside the cinemas, too? Like, that's got to happen. And that's where we just said, we just did it the hard way. We just looked at the cinema system, added them all into that, had to refit all the cinemas, had to refit all the command center parts to allow the pet to land in different places. And it was worth it, because it's like, those are all those hills that were just like, I don't want to ship this game, you know, me personally. I didn't want to ship the game and go, yeah, we just half-assed that pet thing. I wish we'd have done it a little better. Now, something that came in late-ish was the concept of hats being skinnable. So in other words, you could wear a hat to look one way and then have the abilities of another hat. And the idea there was we had so many hats in the game, and a lot of them were relatively costumistic in the sense that they were low price, they offered a few nice features, but you're probably gonna end up wearing some of the later, more expensive hats to protect you. You know, they've got electricity protection, they've got poison protection, they allow you to get more money. But then I thought, is anybody gonna wanna wear, you know, giant Rockman hat? They're all gonna be, you know, end game pictures of screenshots are all gonna be the people flying around in the same hats, because they're just gonna be like, well, this is the best hat, why would I wear a different hat? Because this thing gives the most money, it does the most damage, just ridiculous. And so we just said, we talked about it, and I was like, it's going to make way more sense to allow costume hats. And that was a pretty major refit of the system. It wasn't exactly that the difficulty level of redoing it was hard. It was just a lot of easy work had to get done. So it was probably a couple weeks worth of...
It was kind of tedious.
It was very tedious. And because the system wasn't set up initially for that. It was set up to be one hat, that's your hat, that's the way you look, and it's also the way the powers you get. And then we had to just, as soon as we did that, we were like, huh, we don't really display the powers very clearly, do we? And we came up with a equip panel that pops up and shows a lot. But like I said, one of the benefits of the game, just, you know, working on it, was we really explored every idea as far as we felt we could to make it fun for the player. Like, we tried to put everything in there that, you know, if we put in a feature, we tried to explain it or at least give the player some hints about how it worked and not just drop it in and at the mercy of the community. And just, I don't know, I think that's some kind of, sometimes it works out, you know, sometimes you get lucky. Story I always have is Borderlands 1 was a game where I think that the random gun construction thing was put in relatively late in the game, and I they just happened to hit a home run with that. I mean, I love Borderlands. It's a really fun game. I play it a lot, and I was amazed. I thought that the gun thing was so incredible. I was like, this must have been in since day one. And then you have, like, Randy Pitchford.
Yeah, I remember that was, like, one of their major selling points.
Yeah. Like, oh, bazillions of guns! And they put it in at
the very last minute.
Last few months of the game, I think. And it was great. It worked out.
Before wrapping up, I want to... Yeah. Talking about the hats reminded me of this. Eric here...
oh yeah,
emailed you like you had Let's asked see if I can pull it you, up. You had mentioned I think on our show about like, hey, if you have any hat ideas, send us and Eric sent you an email about a hat about something about like a hat from a Friends episode, and your response was like, Eric was like, what did you say, did you have it up?
Yeah, so it's not as funny as I remember it being, so
oh, hilarious.
I said, a fully cooked turkey, like the ones you see at American Thanksgiving, on your head, hilarious. Yes. And the response was, awesome. Lost 101 team. It's like, all right, I'll take it. I don't know what else I was expecting, but I'll take it. Like, good.
For that hat contest, that was the hat contest, I assume.
Yeah.
For that hat contest, we got, some people would send in, now when I say the word, hundreds, that is not exaggerations. One person sent us a couple hundred suggestions in one letter.
Holy crap.
And it was just like, but they went so far as to put powers on the hats. They're like, a hat, you know, I'm just paraphrasing and, you know, just kind of riffing it. Like, a hat made of cheese that covers the opponent in cheesy goo that slows him down. A hat made of peppermint that causes the guy to sneeze. And just, he started rattling off things. I was like, this is like a, you're basically designing a game at this point. Like, you're not just suggesting that. You're kind of like going, hey, let's do this crazy thing. And we had like a lot of people that, I mean, it was hard because all that stuff, we still have that list. I mean, we still would love to put in pretty much, we hope. A fun thing would have been to be able to put in all those hats. I mean, we just didn't have the time to do it. You know, it would have been awesome to say like, okay, guys, we ran this contest, got 400 hat suggestions, we're doing 400, and just boom, what's up everybody, right. And just have like this crazy moment where we do everything and everybody's just flipping out, but the problem is it would have been very disproportionate because somebody, you know, would have 100 hats in the game and the other guys would have one because they just, you know, suggest one, like yours, like, what about a turkey hat? Some guys were like suggesting dead fetuses and stuff that we were like, oh, that's interesting, like, that'll be
from super meat,
that was from my Tumblr account.
Yeah.
Like, well, like, I mean, you could technically, like, Dr. Fetus from Super Meat Boy. That's kind of like an Easter egg.
Yeah, but he's not dead, though.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess.
He's classic. He's got the monocle and everything, so you're wrong.
Just yeah, there was, like, a lot of stuff that was just, you know, I feel like, you know, we had one guy that suggested his, I guess it's his, you know, sort of.
Eric's face. So when he suggested his, and then he trailed off, and Eric was like,
He suggested his genitals, but he did suggest his. He suggested something like his avatar, I think, that he uses online. Like, he sent us pictures of it, but he didn't. He emailed us, right, as his name, you know, whatever, let's say Todd Smith. He's like, hey, you should do this guy. And he put his photo in there of this weird, you know, funny looking dude with this funny, like, hat and costume on. And I was like, that's a weird suggestion. I kept thinking, why would somebody send me this photo of this really obscure-looking, like, MS Paint-drawn thing? I don't get it. And I realized later, when I was on another social media site, somebody with that avatar posted and said, did you get my suggestion? What about my hat? Like, and I was like, why do you have that weird photo on your avatar? I'm like, oh, this is Todd Smith. Oh, crap, now I'm putting it together.
It's
like
that guy.
It was so bizarre because he was like, out of the blue, you know, imagine you don't know the guy online at all. You don't know he's like maybe perhaps a fan of furries or something. And he's sending you all this weird stuff. And you're like, huh, it's interesting. And then you get like this kind of a contact online and it's that guy. And you're like, oh, okay. Oh, now it's Batman with his mask off. Now I see. Like,
I'm totally not going to put it in the game. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Out of yourself.
Yeah,
so like, who ended up winning?
Huh?
Who ended up winning? Or like, what was the winning hat?
Well, see, that's the winner. Nobody won. Yeah, they didn't put any of the hats in the game.
No, we picked, I think it was 6 hats from the suggestions, and they were the most, we picked the ones that we felt were the most Boss 101-ish in terms of like and ones that we didn't already have a variation of. You know, I think that the turkey and a few others, we had like a bird's nest already. We had
right, one yeah.
sort of similar-esque to that. And we were like, we picked ones that we were a little more kind of breaking out of what we already had, because we actually had to pull hacks that existed out of the game that we felt were a little redundant. Went through the whole list, and we found hats that we had made that were sort of a little redundant of it. We're like, we could probably pull out one of these hats and use it for the contest slot. We weren't technically limited at all by the amount of hats in the game, but we did at one point set a number. We were like, I think it's 275 is the amount of hats, 275, with some bonus surprises available. But we set a number. Once that was set, sort of all the code started to rotate around that. And once we had that number set, it sort of allowed us to finish up certain other things in the game, because we didn't want to leave that number wide open. Like, oh, we can just keep adding hats to the last second. The way the game was set up, it needed to have kind of a fixed point to aim for. And we picked that, like, right before the hat contest, actually. Right before the hat contest, we set that number. And then we said, okay, we'll have slots for six or eight or so winners, and that's what we did. The hats, that was great. We'll do it again too. Well, all those hats are probably, don't be surprised if you see those.
I'm still waiting for the Indie Game Riot hat that shoots red fists out of it.
Oh yeah, you got a fist gun, man. You got a thing that shoots fists. That's fist cannon.
Yeah, man.
There you go.
So Boss 101 by Donnelly Time Foundation, that is Tim Donnelly right up there to my top left. And thank you for spending the time talking about the game. Go buy it, $9.99 on Steam.
$9.99.
It's also on Humble. Anywhere else?
It's on Humble and Steam, and it's Humble. The same price on it. And it gives you a Steam key. So the Humble one just gives you a Steam key.
And actually, I think you guys get more of the revenue from Humble, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't have the paperwork in front of me, but I do not think so.
I thought Humble gave like 70-30 as opposed to 60-40.
I think that may be true. I don't know. I didn't, you know, like I said, I'd have to look. It could be that I thought they were very similar. Like, well, for our price, I don't know that, you know, we are talking tens of cents at this point.
Right.
You know, if we sell a million copies, that would be a freaking awesome.
Either way.
But yeah,
go buy it, $9.99 on Steam. Leave a review if you like it. If you don't, shut the fuck up. Just kidding.
Whoa.
Censorship. That's what we're all about here.
Net neutrality.
Yeah. Anyway, Tim, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be sticking around for the rest of the show.
Please, yes.
And any last words you want to talk about, like website, Twitter handle, all that, whatever you want to say.
I think you already posted you've got the links or something going up there.
We'll have links in description for those watching on YouTube.
Yep, that's it. But, you know, we appreciate the support. You know, thank you, Josh, for hanging in there with us. It's like, I remember talking with you about this 2 years ago.
Been a while.
Yeah, and the question is always like, when's it going to be out? And we're always this far away. It was, you know, we're always taking half the distance to the end.
Like, Rev's going to be upset that he didn't get to be here for this.
But
he was super excited.
After all that, well, now that he's an old man and, you know, he's got grandkids, it's like he can't possibly be.
It's true. He's whittling his computer out of wood as we speak.
he's got like a Flintstones computer with like a little bird pecking away on it.
You think your job's bad?
That's exactly it. No, appreciate the support. You know, thanks to everybody that, you know, certainly hung in there with us, and it meant a lot. You know, we try to respond to everybody that, you know, sends us any letters, but at the same time, you know, I'm sure there's some silent fans out there, and we appreciate that. You know, anybody that's purchased the game, thank you very much. But yeah, it's been awesome. It's awesome, and we're going to keep going too. So hopefully we got some, like I said, some announcements coming.
Nice. boss101.com boss102 will be coming out next month. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, you know what time it is?
What time is it?
It's time for Starting to Riot. This week on Starting the Riot, we are talking about Hand of Fate 2. If you remember, We talked about Hand of Fate 1, the first one.
Was it too long ago?
A couple of years ago.
Was it?
It was before you were even knew of us, as far as I know. Unless you were lurking all these years.
Outside your bushes.
Hand of Fate, we talked about, and we like to take credit for its popularity because we talked about it before it got popular. It was all us. Thank you. But Hand of Fate 2 has recently come out by Defiant, and it looks even more beautiful, even more Dungeons and Dragon-y. By the way, if you don't know what Hand of Fate is, I should explain this. Hand of Fate, it's like a deck builder mixed with like Dungeons and Dragons type of storytelling with the maps, and then you can actually go in and do some real-time fighting, like hack and slash type fighting. It's very cool mishmash of different genres and mechanics, and it's done well. It looks good too. And the maps, by the way, look even better on this one. Just looking at the graphics too. So, currently, Hand of Fate 2 is on Steam for, I believe it's $20. I was voting for Steam Awards.
The first one or the second one?
The second one.
$29.99.
$30. Okay. For $30, worth it still. And it's also on console. You hear that, Eric? It's on console. PS4. I don't know about Xbox. But it is on PS4, I believe. Some of the cards that you get are, some of them give you resources. Every time you move on the map, you pick up the card. Like, the map is made up of cards. So they're all flipped over, face down. You move along, and whichever one you choose to land on, whichever direction you take, you flip it over, and it could be like a resource, it could be an event, a companion, you know, something like that. Right now you're seeing in the gameplay the person's making a dialogue choice, basically, where they were asking for gold or life or something like that. So some of the events are good, some of the events are bad, and will take resources from you. Some of them force you to go into battle. The dice in this one seems to be new. I don't remember that from the first. It's been a little while since I played the first one at this point. So the dice mechanic that I'm seeing in the gameplay is new to me. What questions do you guys have about the game?
I'm just looking at it right now. Did you play the first one? I never even played the third.
Yes.
I assume you liked the first one, though, Josh, as I was just saying.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks interesting, but I've never been into those kind of games. I mean, it does look fun. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to... I mean, I think I know where you're going. So, like, who is this game for? Is it for the deck builder community? Is it for the, like, the beat-em-up kind of community? Like,
I think it's for... I mean, the deck...
Is it just a whole building, different...
There's a deck building mechanic to it, but I wouldn't say it's for them, because when I think deck building, I think like some more like collectible card games type of thing, you know what I mean? Like,
sure,
Hearthstone.
Yeah.
This isn't that. It's not that kind of deck builder.
The deck building is basically just buffs for you to go into battle with.
Well, you take the cards, and that's the cards that you build your deck with are what randomly build the map, right? So that, you know, it gets shuffled up, and then the dealer puts them out, and then you choose, you know, how to go through it based on those cards. And then at the end, if you pass the campaign, quote-unquote, then you win new cards to add to the thing. It could be weapons, or it could be new people, it could be new events. And, you know, you want to fight and stuff like that, because that gives you good stuff when you do that, you know, if you win. So it's not like you're like, oh, I just want all these resource cards. I mean, then there's no game. As a matter of fact, it might, I forget, but it might even force you to have like a certain amount of types, you know, different types of cards in your deck. So, and then I believe there's some new ones added in, like kind of like a boss battle too, each campaign. So like you go through your deck, and then there's like a new one that the dealer has added in, and that you might be part of your prize, you know, if you beat that particular boss.
Is it like Guild of Dungeoneering? Is that the game I'm thinking of?
Where it is similar to that, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's what it kind of reminds me of, or at least, but a knight, you know, a different twist on that. But you're building
Guild of
like
Dungeoneering is using the cards to build a dungeon, whereas this is more of a D&D like story builder type of thing, rather than the actual dungeon. So, and it is also Xbox One as well. So it looks like. Looks like they added a new, like, the map feature that looks really nice. It's kind of like this topography type map. There's a new feature with that. I have the game, but I haven't had the chance to play it because of the New York thing.
Man, you just keep dropping that bomb, don't you?
Did I mention Nancy Cartwright?
Yes, you did.
She wasn't the only famous one I met.
Yeah, you were there, apparently.
Yeah, I was. I met myself. Looked in the mirror and said, "Hey, man.
Well, hello, gorgeous.
You talented bastard." And they added some new combat mechanics like dual wielding, heavy weapon wielding. Obviously, they added new enemies and creatures and things like that. Like in the first one, I know there was goblins, wizards, basically, you know, standard D&D stuff. They added new stuff to this one. There's mini games, I think, in this, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that's what that dice is, which was not in the first one. Which is kind of cool because, you know, it adds a little bit more depth to what the game is. It adds a little bit more unpredictability, I guess, through your deck building. So
it looks good. I mean, I
yeah, it's impressive. The graphics are pretty impressive.
I highly suggest getting it. I mean, $30 is worth it. You said it was $29.99, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, it's worth it. Definitely go get. I don't know if there's anything else that I wanted to mention that's new. The guy, by the way, the dealer, is like, ultimately, the guy is really just trying to fuck you the whole time. I mean, he's your DM, essentially, but he's not a good guy. I haven't played through the whole first one.
Would you say he's an anti-hero? You like that callback, Eric?
See, that's what I was going to say. That's what we call a callback. Well,
people listening to the recorded version don't know what you're talking about, so now you just sound crazy.
That's a two-hour callback, folks. Yeah.
Now you just sound crazy, so chalk one win up for me.
Reaching back in the depths of time.
Speaking of reaching back, you know what's coming up next?
Segway time!
It's a little peep show action.
Peep show.
That was a good segue.
That was pretty good.
Please give all your attention to Early Access.
This week in Peep Show, we're talking Nello. Nello? Nilo?
Nello. Nello. I say Nello.
Lightning fast, out of this world, genre blending, bullet hell, character action, epic, meticulously crafted by the loving couple at Magic and Mirrors.
The loving couple?
That's what it says, isn't it? Yeah.
Is it?
Crafted by the loving couple at Magic and Mirrors, yeah.
I didn't notice that.
There you go.
Okay.
You play as Nello Akua, Akala, an advanced Zenith class alien cyborg of the Tonogaian people. Jesus, I'm already... and wield a vast array of weaponry with trusted telekinesis hands of Aphelion. Fight your way off the desolate planet.
Sci-fi terminology.
Or landmines.
Flimaniba from the hostile threat of the Nightshith, a swarm of parasitic machines created by your people. For those who are listening to this in audio form, I've completely butchered this game. Please look at it at a video of some sorts to re-still.
I think the thing about this game that first time I looked at it was just the sheer speed of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Nier Automata. Tomato. I've never played that game. I'm going to be perfectly honest.
Tomatoa from Moana, right?
Yeah, but I know about it. And anyway, the speed of this game, what I was going back to, the speed of this game is what first hooked me in. And you mentioned how polished it was before we started recording, and the fact that this is an alpha.
Yeah.
Which is another thing that caught me. It kind of reminds me of, in its aesthetic, it kind of reminds me of Warframe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely Warframe-ish.
So I wonder if they kind of got that out of it.
Maybe Warframe. What I see up on the screen right now, with him dashing around, maybe even you want to add in, is it the Hulk Ultimate Destruction, where he's like running on buildings and stuff and going,
yeah.
Like, there's a lot of that. I'm seeing a lot of that kind of stuff.
Maybe a little MDK. Have you ever played MDK?
Oh, my God, MDK. Oh. Wow, that's a callback.
That's what, yeah, the kind of the sprawling landscapes where you're jumping from, like, one giant. Yeah, well, I guess, like, with the Incredible Hulk's like that, too,
yeah,
I guess.
No,
jumping from building to building, yeah. Man, I don't know, like, anytime I see a trailer like this, I was like, man, this looks really good, and it's alpha. It's either A, never going to come out, or B, by the time it comes out, it's probably going to be a completely different game, and, like, my hopes are going to be crushed, and I'm going to be crying in the corner with my blankie.
There is, because when you see something this good, I think we talked about it a few episodes ago, about the scope of things and how it kind of, like...
Yeah.
It's kind of like, oh, man, it looks so good. Is it good, too good to be true, or are you going to be able to do what you want to do because of how much it's going to take? So... I don't know. It is... I prefer to be optimistic.
Well, yeah, I mean, so do I. Like, I feel like I think the idea of them, which may be something simple, and I just, obviously, I don't understand the concepts of it, but clearly this is a very third-person character-driven action platforming game.
A little bit of hardcore side, too, by the way. Like, yeah. You're talking about hardcore gamers. I think because of the speed of this, you're going to have some major Twitch reactions, you know what I mean?
That, or maybe there's some sort of like bullet time they might put in later to kind of slow things down. But the other thing I noticed is that there's a couple of, at least in the trailer that I was watching earlier in the day, there's a time or chance or whatever where the camera actually goes into like a bird's eye view.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks more like a twin stick shooter, which I don't know if that's just like, hey, if you don't like the third person, you could play it this way, and it's just one of the aesthetics, or if it's just a I don't know.
It seems like it's a level mechanic or something like that.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the other problem too. Is like a lot of these trailers, like some of the stuff's so cut together that you could be looking at, 30 different levels all at once and never know. But no, it looks really, really good.
You know what else looks really good?
Really scary good.
Yeah.
Free fun.
I wasn't going to go there. I was just going to give you a compliment, but fine.
Oh, whatever. Well, let's hear it. I mean, I didn't have too good of a day today.
No, fuck you. You're ugly.
Some encouragement. All right, good. Yeah. Treating like the piece of meat that I am. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate it.
Anyway, Nello, it looks like if you're a hardcore gamer that's into really fast-paced stuff and twitchy kind of gameplay, this is for you.
Man, this game would be disgusting if it fucking had multiplayer.
I think if that's what I'm saying, it's like Nier mixed with Warframe.
Yeah.
So if you imagine like Warframe type multiplayer with this, I don't know. Yeah. They might have a hit on their hands if they can pull it off. Some cool bosses too. It looks like. Oh, that's not a boss.
Everything. I don't know. I'm a sucker for the sci-fi stuff, so I always give sci-fi stuff a leg up because I feel like,
even though you can't pronounce any of the sci-fi words.
Well, I mean, I can't pronounce any of the fancy words either. So it's. I can't even pronounce regular English words. We've been through this. It's no big deal. It's just one of those things. At least I admit my faults, Josh.
I don't have faults. I went to New York.
I saw Nancy Cartwright.
I'm perfect.
Wow. Man, I need to get you a t-shirt that says that or something. Like, I met Nancy Cartwright, AMA.
And Bob Bergen.
It's going to be like, ask me about Nancy Cartwright.
Yep. You can ask me.
Anyway, we'll put a shirt for Nancy Cartwright that says "I met Josh."
Man,
mail it to her PO box.
No, yeah, if we could get Nancy Cartwright a shirt that says "I have no idea who Josh is, and I am pursuing legal action against him."
But on that shirt is a picture of those two together.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I have to say,
this is like, who is this guy?
This is the perfect topic to move on to free fun with. This week on Free Fun, we're talking about Book It. Book It can be found on Game Jolt by Claymaker, is the name. And it's really a pretty simple puzzle platformer. You have to be on this platform is one of those that you have to be super precise with. You're going to die a lot. I got to say, though, for a free game, you know, not a whole lot of time or resources normally put into a free game. The art in this is super detailed pixel art. It's really nice. And the, although the character, strangely, is almost stop motion-y, like, like clay almost, which is kind of interesting to me. And that was the gameplay, by the way, is just a quick trailer. I couldn't find, like, actual gameplay. But anyway, the point of it is you guide a short blob named Plorplorp to the great tiki bar in space, which sounds like something from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
So.
Sounds like something Desmond Bryant came up with.
No. No, yeah, totally.
Yeah, every time you bring a callback, it's always from something that's not being recorded, so everyone just thinks you're all fucking right. Insane.
Well, they got
except for me.
Research.
Except for me.
It's like a game of Fez. You gotta decode the secret language that's happening here.
Right. Stupid Tetris pieces actually mean something. No, I totally dig this. Like, I don't even know what you'd call it. I guess like a low polygon.
I don't know, because it's the bits. There's
well, it's
a lot
sprites,
of bits. Yeah,
still,
there's
but,
a lot of detail. But I guess
got
yeah,
the Donkey Kong Country look to it to me. It's like what the hell's that even called? I don't remember.
Anyways, Book It, short little game for free on Game Jolt by Claymaker. Plorplorp is awaiting your guidance.
So talk about me pronouncing shit.
I did it right. You sounded like you had a stroke. So
maybe I did.
anyway, you know what time it is.
What time is it?
It's time for the end of the show.
Oh, no!
Yeah, and I do have to say that if you want to help us, there's ways that you can do it by going to patreon.com/IndieGameRiot, and we always appreciate any contributions you can make to help to help us make the show better for all of you, as well as IRX, if you are a fan of Indie Revolution Expo. One other thing I wanted to mention for those of you in the live chat is, because I haven't mentioned it for a while, we do also have, we're an affiliate, so we are allowed to accept Twitch subscriptions. Amazon Prime counts as that, so if you have an Amazon Prime, that's free, one free subscription, you can switch it to us every month. I super appreciate that for that sort of support. If you can't support us that way, other ways you can do it is by contacting us with any kind of news or games or things like that you think we should talk about. And just do that by going to Twitter at IGRPodcast or Facebook.com/IGRPodcast. And of course, you can email us, contact@IndieGameRiot.com. Thank you again to Tim Donnelly.
Hey, Tim. What's up?
For coming on the show and talking about Boss 101.
Thanks.
And again, boss101.com. You can find Boss 101 on Steam and Humble for $9.99. $10. That's all it is for
it
a
is.
Game packed full of stuff. Packed full of stuff. If you don't believe me, go look. Just go to the page and look at the trailer, and you will realize how much stuff there is in that game. All for a measly.
That trailer only shows $4.99 of the $10.99 you're getting. The $9.99 you're getting. You double the value. There's twice as much stuff as that trailer could show. You had to cut things out.
Absolutely. So go do that. And any last words, gentlemen?
Have a good Thanksgiving if you're in the United States.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah. And if not, have a great Thursday.
If you're not in the United States, buy a turkey. You can join us.
Save your money and just buy Boss 101. Save your money. Bravo. Turkey's not that great.
Actually, I fucking love turkey. But I agree.
Love turkey.
Josh powered through, man. Full of Thanksgiving dinner. He made it through the whole show.
Yeah, and fall
asleep. Now he's going to go hibernate for 3 months.
That's what I feel like doing.
He's going to go into his cave and just sleep.
I actually am going to have, I mean, besides the fact that we have leftovers, so we're going to have turkey, you know, for the rest of the fucking month. Tomorrow is like our family's Thanksgiving dinner, like my whole family. And so we're doing another one tomorrow with probably nice. More food. So, my diabetes over here is not happy.
Through the roof.
Just so much. Anyway, say your goodbyes, gentlemen.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
Jules. Goodbye, gentlemen.